Jim and I work at a place called the Institute for Peace and Justice in St. Louis, and it's an independent educational consultant group. We work with teachers, we work with family people, church people, on a variety of peace and justice issues. That could range from conflict resolution up to war, global poverty issues. Our emphasis is always to try to make it those issues which sometimes seem very overwhelming, to make it understandable to people, and to really work with those issues in a way that people can say, not only can I understand it, but I feel there's something I can do, some action. So it's sort of education always with an action component. The parenting part of it, that's one of our biggest programs, and that really is saying, what do all these issues have to do with family life? How can we be concerned about family life and be concerned about these peace and justice issues at the same time? So it's kind of like, I guess, having the image of a family, with who's ever in the family, people with their hands together, maybe standing together, but looking out, looking at the world outside of themselves rather than just looking at each other, but with a belief that people can really enrich their own family and at the same time be concerned about what's going on in the world. And we define family very broadly. So however people, there's, feel like there's families of all different varieties. What we're doing this week and what we usually do in Parenting for Peace and Justice work is really, we're going to be looking at whatever the issues are, almost always with some kind of connection to children. We realize that in families, some families, there's not a child, but we also realize that many people nurture children in other ways, to either maybe as teachers or as friends or as aunts or uncles. I mean, you know, there's just a lot of ways that children get nurtured. So we're probably going to be making pretty frequent allusions to children and how children fit into this and how children can be brought into this. Now, if as we, and we're going to give you a chance to tell us a little bit about who you are sort of as a group. We're not going to, we don't feel like we have the time to go around and have each person say, but, and if there is something else that surfaces in that, we're also very flexible in the issues and the way we deal with them. So if you've got to, you know, say, what I really want to look at the issue of conflict resolution between me and somebody else I work with, we can certainly use a lot of allusions to that, to a lot of examples to that. The other three classes that we'll have this week, and I realize all of you won't be in all four classes, but just to let you know, Wednesday we will be dealing with the issue of racial justice, and particularly with the family dimension. Thursday we'll be talking about the issue of solidarity with people who are economically poor. So we'll be looking at the issue of poverty, and then how do those of us who are not economically poor in a family context relate to that. But both of those particularly will have real strong dimensions of what does that mean to me as an individual, not just me and a child, but me as an individual. And then Friday, we'll be talking about the issue of violence, and there's so many dimensions to violence, and we only have an hour in each one of these sessions, but that will depend a lot on who's there, probably. We might talk about toys and violence. We might talk about television and violence. We will probably talk about the issue of masculinity and violence and how that relates to family issues. We might talk about conflict resolution outside the home and how to help ourselves and our children resolve those conflicts without getting in fights and things like that. So that'll kind of depend on who we are. Do you want to say anything else? Introduction.
How many of you parent children or parenting children right now? Preschool, elementary school age, junior, senior high, college, you're out working. They've left home, come back.
More than once?
More than twice?
No, there's no tape recorder, and we need one.
Okay, I'll try to find it.
Thank you. How many of you are teachers, classroom teachers, or Sunday school teachers? All right. One of the things we find really helpful are resources. People come looking for resources. In terms of what's in the bookstore of ours that we were recommending, Kathy did a book called Starting Out Right for people who parent or teach preschool age kids or who grandparent children that are preschool age. And then our own family story, as well as 12 other families, Parenting for Peace and Justice, and this is the 10 years later version. So people said, well, after you've had the kids as teenagers, then we want to see what you have to say. So we did it 10 years later after they were teenagers and tried to reflect on that experience very honestly and brokenly, as well as some things that do work. So those are in the bookstore. And then a book that I did that looks at more of the spirituality underlying the issues, Journey into Compassion, that's over there also. We have many other things that we've produced for families and in classroom situations. There are catalogs on the table if you want. The green one has all our parenting resources, and the ivory-colored one has all our educator resources, so you're free to take one of those. There'll be handouts each class. There's also our Parenting for Peace and Justice newsletter. You can take a copy if you want. It comes out 6 times a year. There's cards over there in case you want to become members of the network. The cards give it to you at half price, so that doesn't hurt. Each issue is different. This is on dealing with immigration, immigrant and refugee families. The issue before was, I think, on inclusivity.
And the next one's going to be on sports and values.
So you get a sense of the range of what you get.
Moves from one thing to the next.
When you get us.
Yeah.
But those are some of the resources that are available.
What we wanted to do today, with lots of time for discussion, so just some input from us and a lot of chance for you to discuss with each other and then with the whole group, are three issues. And, you know, since we don't have a lot of time, we're not going to be able to go into these in a lot of depth. Three issues that we think are key in terms of family conflict resolution. One is the issue of affirmation, self-esteem building. A second one is the issue of dealing with anger. And then the third one, we want to talk some about family meetings. And we will broaden that discussion to talk about that whole idea of participatory decision making beyond just a family, because the model fits a lot of other places that we live and work and worship too.
Excuse me. Sure. Can we be okay right here?
Sure.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. Thanks. In terms of the issue of affirmation, just to say in terms of an introduction to that, we're feeling like the whole idea of an affirming environment is a key one to conflict resolution. That unless, no matter what we learn to do, unless it's done in the context of an environment of affirmation, it probably won't work. So that's why we always want to start with that. And what I wanted to do, even before we talk a little bit about it, is to ask you right now to think about somebody that you really need to affirm. Now, maybe it's somebody in your family, however you define your family. Maybe it's somebody that's a coworker of yours. Maybe it's somebody in your church that you're having a hard time thinking positive thoughts about at this moment, but somebody that you say, all right, I need to be affirming to that person. What I'm going to ask you to do is two things, just right here. I'm going to ask you to think of one strength of that person, whoever that person is. Then I'm going to ask you to think of one thing you can do that's different from what you normally do with that person that would be an affirming thing to do to that person. Now, for some of you, that person may be here with you at Holman Village. For some of you, that person may not be somebody you'll see for a while, maybe that affirming thing is, oh, maybe I need to drop them a note saying, I miss you, I'm thinking about you, da-da-da. Or maybe it's something that you're going to say, well, as soon as I get back and see that person, this is something I'm going to do. But I want us all to be thinking concretely rather than sort of in general, in generalities about affirmation. So think of a person that you really need to affirm, either in your family or somebody you work with or somebody you're close to, somehow a friend. One strength of that person, and then one thing you're going to do. Then I'm going to ask you each just real quickly to turn to the person next to you and say, this person is Joey and 4 years old, and this is what I'm going to do. You know, just so everybody gets a chance to talk for a minute. So I'll give you a chance to think. Yeah, in terms of what affirmation means, a simple explanation would be calling out the strengths of somebody else, lifting up the good points of that person, being encouraging. Those are all elements of affirmation without trying to come up with an actual definition. Okay, can we just turn to the person next and say, this is the person I was thinking of and this is what I'm committed to do. Is a little inbuilt accountability that maybe because you told one other person what you were going to do, that kind of makes it like, even though maybe the other person's not going to be there, that you'll feel like, well, yeah, I better do that. I told somebody I was going to do that. I wanted to just give you, just real briefly, just about 3 minutes worth of sort of the theory behind the foundational aspect of affirmation as we see it in terms of family conflict resolution, but also in terms of peace and justice in general. That we think it's real difficult for any of us to care about other people unless we feel good about ourselves. So all of the kind of empathy and compassion that often we're trying to encourage in ourselves and then in young people, if we're working with young people, it's difficult to do that unless you feel okay about yourself. Now, a lot of us build our own self-esteem by going out to other people. I'm not saying that you wait until you feel perfectly okay yourself before you go out to other people, but I think you really have to pay attention to that in yourself and in the people you're nurturing if you want people to be caring about other people. It's also very difficult to really be able to embrace diversity unless we feel good about ourselves. And that's a real key issue, a real key challenge, I think, in peace and justice issues, is that we can really embrace the fact that we are all not alike, that we can really celebrate diversity, and that we can really lift that diversity up. And it's hard to do if you don't feel good about yourself. When you read things about people who are drawn to like the Aryan Nation movements and the white power movements and even the Klan, all that, a lot of people that are drawn into that are drawn into that because they don't feel very good about themselves. So here's a group that tells me just because of something about who I am, my race or my religion, makes me superior to all these other groups of people, you know. So, and there's a lot more to racism, there's a lot more to religious discrimination, there's a lot more to homophobia than that. But I think that's a real basic element of it, is being able to feel good about yourself. That's a real good antidote to all that kind of bigotry. And then it's difficult to be able to take risks unless we feel good about ourselves. And a lot of work in peace and justice is risky, risk-taking kind of work. I don't mean thrill-seeking kind of work, but the kind of work where you have to sort of stand up and say, I don't agree with that, or decide to wear a button, or put a bumper sticker on your car. I mean, those are kind of minimal kind of risks, but and certainly when you're talking about people in Central America, people in South Africa, there's real risks that are being involved, that have been involved, that are involved in substantial social change. And I think people are not risk takers if they're really struggling with who they are. And then the last thing is, I think in terms of all the kinds of violence that we're dealing with as a society today in the world, but just even looking at the United States, where we're talking a lot about and seeing a lot of issues of abuse, we're seeing a lot of just, when you live and work with kids, a lot of fights that, as one educator said, that used to be a kid punching another kid, and now you're always afraid of a weapon being involved in that. And a lot of adults, I'm not saying that kids are the ones that are doing it, a lot of adults, a lot of us as adults, who are seemingly more violent than we used to be, a lot of crime, a lot of violence in the media, there's just a lot. Our society seems to be more about people that are doing work on violence prevention and intervention. A lot of the work that they're doing, a lot of work that's even being done with gangs, has to do with self-esteem building, kind of moving back and saying, okay, you know, a lot of violent behavior comes from people feeling very powerless about their own lives. So, okay, I feel kind of like I don't have control, or I'm not important, nobody seems to be giving me any kind of respect about anything, so I'll show them. You know, I'll do this. And then that's a simplification and an overgeneralization, but it is true in many respects. And there's been a lot of work that, like, even people in the police department have been doing that shows that work on self-esteem can have impacts in terms of reduction in homicides and things like that. So I think for all of those reasons, it's just really foundational when we're talking about peace and justice work. Sure, go ahead.
Part of this stuff about affirmation and self-esteem has to do with telling the truth about things, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And as with diversity, and doesn't that mean that you know, that as parents, as teachers, that we have to be careful as to the kind of esteeming things that we do, that, you know, that's not false, but you know, think of my daughter you know, being told that she's just a natural athlete, and she's not. You know, she's a klutz. No, she has a wonderful voice.
But yeah. No colors.
No. You don't tell her that she's a klutz, but you also don't tell her that she's a natural athlete. You know, she has a very good ear for music. Mm-hmm. Don't we need to be careful about making the affirming and esteeming that we do genuine?
Genuine, yeah. I think that the idea of genuineness, our integrity, I mean, I think there has to be integrity involved in. So you're not just saying it because you think this will make the person feel great.
Yeah.
That it does, and there are, everybody has a lot of strengths. So, and I think sometimes we get so overwhelmed by what are not the strengths of a person that we don't always see those strengths, or certainly don't always point those strengths out to the other person. And also, I think even in terms of correcting children, if we want to put it that way, or working for change in children, a lot of that can be done in a very affirming way. Even I have a friend that's a teacher, and what she does with very young children is, even a kid that's really out of bounds, that behavior is just completely out of bounds, she will be honest about that with the child, but it's a beautiful way she does it. She'll say, okay, Ben, the first 15 minutes today were wonderful. You came into the classroom, you didn't punch Joey, you hung your coat up without getting into a fight, you shared your space at the sand table, you did da-da-da, you know, she'll say, the rest of the day went to pot, but the first 15 minutes were great. I know you can do it. You can, because you showed me in those 15 minutes. And, like, even when we're trying to change behavior, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that's what you're dealing with in the example you gave, but I think we can do it. What about concretely, how do you do it in your families? particularly in families. And if you want to broaden that to other people you're real close to, when we say, let's be affirming, let's be more affirming, let's build self-esteem, what are we talking about? Concretely, what do we do? What are you already doing?
Part of self-esteem is respect of children as individuals.
And how do you show respect of children? Give me a concrete example.
I wouldn't go screaming at you if you came over and knocked over my glass, because you're not somebody that's in my family. So, so the way I deal with it is I try to think, well, that's not how I would treat anybody else, so why should I scream at them for knocking over my pop on the table?
Okay. Yeah.
So I try to put them in a place of, I don't want to say ownership, you don't own your children, but not familiar. I try to put them in a place of not being familiar, and that's not how I would act to you. So that's how I try not to act with the children. I think that's one of the problems adults generally have, is we think we're so much more mature and we know not to knock over a glass.
But you're right. We wouldn't scream at another adult.
I wouldn't go screaming
at
you for knocking something over. I'd go, oh, that's okay. Or, you know, and maybe you're not going to do that. Oh, that's okay with your child, but you're not going to just think that just because you're the parent, you have the allowance to scream at.
Yeah, that's a good example. What else? We're talking about what are concrete ways that we build self-esteem and do affirmation in our families or in our most intimate circles.
Look for strengths.
Her
son Luke is not really interested in school. But one of the things that he does really well is he's into cartoons and drawing and reproducing cartoons. He does wonderfully good job at it. So
looking for opportunities to.
Great.
What else? What other things do people do? I have a feeling that there's lots of affirming that goes on with people in this group. Sure.
Well, I think appreciation and praise was kind of, but appreciation for not only things done or performed, but for just being.
And being really honest with people too about how they make you feel when you're with them. I think that's a part that we often don't do for children. Mm-hmm. Saying when I'm with you, I just really feel good. I mean that sometimes we don't just give them that, and that doesn't make any difference whether you made an A on your test or anything else. It's just you, who you are.
And what part of this may be another item, but linked to that maybe is family rituals or one-on-one type rituals, whether it be, bedtime ritual of, song or prayer or back scratch or, story or whatever, or whether it's a conversation in the car on the way to the bus stop or something like that.
Yeah. So, and sometimes if the family is large, you have to really work to make those one-on-one times, which I think are important to young people.
You also brought up the point about if you don't like yourself. And as a parent, I think if you're going to do a good job with your children, you have an obligation to work on your own self-esteem and to get that in place. Mm-hmm.
So the kinds of things we're talking about with regard to young people also apply to other adults and to ourselves.
Kind of analogy that you hear from what you do with other people always makes me feel really wonderful when it's clear that something I do matters to somebody else. And I think even with really little kids, to let them do something that has an effect, to say, well, what shall we have for dinner? You want to have that? Makes me gag, but let's have it. Nutritional meal ever, but if the kid says that's what I want to have and you've asked, then have it.
Right.
You know, when I was a kid, we used to put food coloring in the rice. My mother must have ate bowls of the most sickening blue rice food. That's what she loves.
That's true. That's so true for adolescents, I think. People that do a lot of work with adolescents talk about that idea of potency being so important for adolescents. They have to know that what they do matters. That's also very true for younger children, but that sometimes adolescents get a feeling like as they begin to understand all the problems that are in the world, it's kind of like, well, there's nothing I can do, you know, so it's, sure.
One of the things with each of our kids, I've had an interesting experience telling them that I did exactly the same thing they were doing and got punished exactly the same way they're getting punished. But it's been a real kind of a neat leveling thing.
Okay.
I think it's really important when we correct kids, we don't give them the impression that we are the righteous one. And never, you know, there's some understanding that comes with it, and that there can be forgiveness and all of that, and our own brokenness and acknowledging our own failures with our kids and asking for their forgiveness makes it a lot easier for them than to hear the opposite coming from us.
I think another thing that is important with any age is really listening when they're talking.
That's very affirming, I think. And there's nothing less, more unaffirming than when you're talking to somebody's. And we do that to children a lot. I think that's one that you kind of, you're reading the newspaper or you're, you know, thinking about something else, yeah.
I was thinking of just our two, we have two younger boys and just what observers they are of things. And so I think one thing, kind of a gift that I got from my dad and mom was they showed my brother and I in front of us how much they cared about one another. And seeing that going on without any really direct impact on us created, I think, an environment where if your dad says, I love you, you've kind of seen what that is to mom, and you trust that. And so I think that's a real important thing for us, letting our two boys see us treat one another with respect and dignity and those kind of things.
There's something really powerful about tenderness and touch and all of that. A lot of kids don't get that, and if they see it, like Teresa always says, oh, that's gross, you know, and she gets real embarrassed with her affection in front of her, but, you know, we know. We know that it's really important for her to see that.
I have a question I don't have a good answer for. Okay, say your child is about to come in harm's way to walk in front of the car. You don't have time to do anything but warn them to get back if you can't reach him. Do they need to know that you have some kind of signal that you're really wanting them to say, Jack, get out of the street right away, you know? You don't have time to do anything but holler, and so should you sort of prepare them for things like that so they will know that you're really serious when you do that and it's really important, or what would be a good way to do that?
But how would people respond to that?
If my kid's in the front of a car, I'd grab them.
Well, he's saying if you're not even close enough to grab them, you know, do they need a signal?
Communication. It has to be an emergency right now.
Well, we have, with our littlest one, we have a, we say stop, she's supposed to stop because we're not playing and because we think she's going to get hurt. It seems to work.
A tone of voice can be a real critical thing, and I think that a little bit what Barbara and you were talking before, I think one of the things, if you find yourself yelling at a child all the time for everything, one of the bad effects of that can be when you really need to yell at them, you know they're going to get hit or something like that, then they may just kind of like, well, I'm just so used to that, it just sort of goes right over. That's probably the most important thing, is that when if I use this tone of voice, there's something real serious happening. Let's move. I know we've got a couple other things, so we want to talk about anger and the family meeting.
The kids one time told me that I had a face that said no. Talk about an affirmation.
That was with integrity.
It dawned on me that there's a whole lot of affirmation that can go on with a smile. Francis used to talk about loving people with his eyes, and that's something we can do all the time. We can practice that on the street corners, up and down the walkway, at the dinner table, wherever we are. But there's a whole lot of, you know, because you know what it does to you when somebody smiles at you in the workplace. You know, and just even touch, just tender touch, loving touch. That's really affirming, powerful stuff. But, hey, we get angry. And there's a whole lot of anger out there. There's a lot of rage out there. And the people doing violence prevention work say, besides self-esteem, the second most important thing you've got to do with kids, but it's for the society as a whole, to help people find appropriate ways of expressing their rage and their anger and not to suppress it. Kathy and I have learned over the years with our kids, they're now 23, 21, and 19, that some of the best religious education and values education we could ever do with the kids was with tapes, and especially if we were in the car together. So out of our own experience and that of many others, we've found four that have really, really impacted folks. And we want to share these with you during the course of the week, but I'm going to play a song from Teaching Peace. This is a great little tape if you got grade school kids, grandkids, nieces and nephews. But if the kids are anywhere from 4 to about 10, it's a great tape with affirmation stuff, appreciation for diversity, caring for the earth, loving yourself. I'm going to play a song from that. Rainbow People's got, it's a wonderful collection for kids and adults, families, all ages. If you're working with teenagers, good stuff on discipleship, non-consumer living, helping the kids to feel okay about being different from everybody else, caring for the earth, getting along with people who are different, making a difference in the world. Great tape for teenagers. And then one we're going to use later on, one, the Solidarity with the Poor, Jubilee, Jim and Jean Strathdy, Christian musicians, Methodists. Great music. It's got a lot of good justice and peace, environmental concerns, but it's good family stuff. So these are four tapes that are listed in our resources that we have here with us during the week. These are the only resources that we have. We bring, if you want them, you can get them from us because it's hard to find them anywhere else. But I want to play one song from this tape as a good reminder, because if you're working with kids, if you can put it to song, they're liable to remember. I mean, if you're working with kids and you don't use music, you're missing the best way to communicate with them. So let's use a medium that they're comfortable with and use good stuff. So this is a song that helps us, at least gives us one idea about what to do with our anger. And it's a participatory song. So you'll figure out, I hope, eventually, what your role is. And those who are quicker, the rest of us can learn from them. Because some people will grab it right away. But we really want you to participate. But I got to find where it is because it didn't show up until late.
Nickies and Juans and Jamals and Debbie.
Use a word.
Use a word.
Someone grabs your book and you go for your left hook. Use a word.
Use a word.